You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Good morning to you. Doug Gottlieb, Rob Parker in for Dan, and the Danettes. Boys vacation is over as of Monday, right? They're back Monday. So in the meantime, you're just stuck with us. Our guy, Bucky Brooks, who's he's actually a high school football coach, former NFL player, and outstanding analyst for the NFL Network and part of the Move the Sticks podcast, which I was listening to this morning driving in. He'll join us at half past the hour. We'll get his take on the Pat Mahomes contract and on Cam Newton and what we can expect from the former NFL MVP with the New England Patriots, that upcoming half past the hour. Rob Parker, you can hear him on The Odd Couple, which is 7 o'clock Eastern, 4 o'clock Pacific here on Fox Sports Radio, your iHeartRadio app. You can also download the Inside the Parker podcast, which is all baseball all the time. And you can read his work in Deadspin, in which he wrote that Pat Mahomes missed a golden opportunity to get a fully guaranteed contract, something we debated and we'll talk with Bucky Brooks upcoming. But Rob, I want to talk about the biggest story of the day, and that's that yesterday the Big Ten took the lead and they decided to announce that they were not, are not, going to play going to play non-conference games if they have an upcoming 2020 college football season. Here's the new commissioner of the Big Ten, Kevin Warren.
This decision would allow us to, one, do the right thing by our student athletes, keep them at the forefront of all of our decisions, and make sure we create an environment to give us the best chance to play. I mean, one thing we have to realize that this is not a fait accompli that we're going to have sports in the fall. We may not have sports in the fall. We may not have a college football season in the Big Ten.
What's your reaction to his announcement?
Well, I mean, this is such a fluid situation. I don't think anybody really knows, Doug, what's going to happen come September and whether there'll be a college football season, the virus, will it be a vaccine, will something, how bad it's going to be. So I think that they're going about it trying to figure out a way to somehow salvage a football season, somehow get players on the football field so that they can get their broadcast money and all the other stuff that comes with it, even if they have to go without fans. And at one point they were talking about having fans sign waivers and all kinds of, and maybe just having 25% of the crowd coming in to watch the game. Whatever, by hook or crook, they would love to try to get a football season in. So I think this is just like a step. It doesn't mean that this is going to work or it fixes the problem by just playing conference games instead of bringing other people in. So it's very up in the air. I thought there's a chance that we would get football. I'm not so sure now, Doug. I'm not sure. I think the NBA and baseball is going to start and we'll see what happens as we go forward. And I think that'll probably be the biggest test to see if somehow, some way, you know, we can have football.
Well, I mean, look, and this is, to me, this is actually universal to the NBA bubble. It's a little different with Major League Baseball's bubble, but I'm of the belief, and you're allowed to dispute this, the college football players are way better off on campus than they are at home. And the reason is, when you're on campus, though you're not, you are bringing in people from all different areas of the country, you're at least in a protected environment. You at least have the absolute best medical care. You can get tested, which is incredibly expensive, on a daily or weekly basis. And if you do pop up positive, as I think Clemson had like 26 kids pop up positive, you're going to get the best treatment, as opposed to if you're at home, the environment is not contained. Right, the world has opened up. Whether you wear a mask or don't wear a mask, some people, some states are making it mandatory. Some are making it mandatory but not enforced. Some are not making it mandatory. So the point is that it's not like you're coming from a quarantine bubble and going to the Wild Wild West. You're coming from an open environment and going to some sort of bubble-ish sort of area with far better medical protection. Right. That's how they're already popping up positive. And that's, oh, yeah, by the way, why they're getting treated. And I think ultimately they will hopefully be fine. Knock on wood. I think that's and it's a real and legitimate argument to say, hey, look, if we bring in non-conference schools, like one, we don't know if they're going to play. We don't know if they have the funding. And even if they do play, we don't actually know how much they've been tested or if they've been in quarantine the way that we've been in quarantine. We know that the Big Ten schools have all the same protocols. We know that they're all well-funded. We know that they've all been tested. And if they popped up positive, they've been removed from their activities. I actually think this is the safest and smartest way. And I think the Big Ten, though some people, cynics, will say that this is the Big Ten, you know, jumping ahead and doing like a preemptive strike. It's not. It's they've come to a conclusion kind of quickly that this is the smartest, most likely way to have a football season. And look, the Big Ten, and granted, it was a different commissioner, but they've done a lot of things ahead of the curve, mostly for the good of college football and especially the good of the Big Ten. And it's worked, whether it's their own network or whether it's conference expansion. And I think it stands to reason that they believe this is the path most likely to give us a college football season.
Yeah, I get it. I'm still not sure that even given these circumstances and what they're trying to accomplish, as you mentioned before, with all the players at Clemson, like could there be an outbreak at Michigan, God forbid, or Michigan State or, you know, Northwestern or something like that? We just don't know. And how would that impact, you know, whether or not you would go along or go forward with a football season? We saw the Ivy League shut down all fall sports, right? And just decided to pull the plug and say that they don't think it's safe enough. So they decided not to do anything. Is that because, Doug, the Ivy League doesn't have big football programs that are make a ton of money and it's easier to shut down? Is that the reason that they can be more cautiously, cautious with the student athletes compared to these big time factory producing football schools?
Why do you like every argument you bring comes to the argument of money and factory, and there's a negative, there's this draconian. Like, do you think those kids don't want to play football? Do you think
they do want to play football? Okay. But it's not. Sometimes you have to protect people from themselves.
Fair.
It's just like the government telling people, don't go outside or stay in the house, Doug. It's not that people don't want to go out. You don't think people want to go out and socialize and go to the beach and have lunch with their friends? Yes. But sometimes you have to protect people from themselves because, yes, they do want to do those things, but it's not good for them, and you know better than
them. But football's never been good for you. Ted, like, football is, like, this is, like, the idea of safe football is such, it's such an oxymoron. It's not. And it's, like, look, playing college basketball or playing
safer,
okay,
not safe.
Okay,
safer.
You're actually safer playing college football than you are being at home. Because when you're at home, do you think a college kid who's 19, 20 years old is at home? If he doesn't have college football, is he just staying at home in quarantine and not leaving his house?
But Doug, I'm
asking you a question.
I don't know. Not some people.
Not
everybody. Some people might stay home.
No, they wouldn't.
Maybe they have a grandparent, or maybe they have cousins or other siblings,
right,
or people
so
with
they're,
issues.
They're actually safer, and their family's safer. And look, here's another part of, like, it's actually a lie that people, the idea that, well, you can't do it if we have online classes. Maybe you should ask an actual athlete. Many students, and I don't know an actual percentage, but as I've discussed things with several schools in terms of coaching in Division I, and I have a brother who's been an assistant coach for 25 years in Division I basketball, most student athletes take online courses almost exclusively. They don't actually, like, oh, you can't have, like, what happens if the whole school goes online is the whole school loses a ton of money. Because they make money not just off tuition, but also off room and board and everything else on campus. That's a massive amount. And so you have to mitigate all of those losses. Additionally, putting people, attendance is a big financial generator, not just in terms of money, but also for the town. And that's where they get donations for the rest of the schools
As somebody who teaches, I also believe that hands-on, being able to have one-on-one talks with somebody and instruction is important too.
I don't dispute that. I'm not disputing
online,
that.
But I'm telling you, no, I'd much rather be in a classroom and be able to answer the kids' questions, be able to go to them and give them one-on-one guidance and have them understand rather than it just be online. I get online, but I'm telling you, I'd rather the hands-on approach.
Rob, I agree with you, okay? And, like, look, I got three little kids, and, you know, there's a social aspect to it. There's a mental health aspect to it for little kids going to class, right? Anybody who has kids knows that there's some good and there's some bad to the homeschooling thing, and it's been really, really interesting to kind of navigate it. I'm just telling you the reality of it is, even though in-person learning, by my estimation, and yours as well, and you're actually a professor at USC, in-person learning is way better than learning online. But the reality of it is that it's kind of a red herring. College football and college basketball players rarely step foot on that part of campus anyway. They're not actually going to miss the in-person learning because in an effort to make their lives easier, they just do online classes. That way they can have plenty of time to rest and to hang out and have a life, do their football, do their basketball, and then still be a regular human being. It's just an easier way to balance it and an easier way for them to keep up with their school. It's like, you know, it's what used to be correspondence courses are now online courses, and even the core curriculum is taught online previous to this. And, you know, I think the idea, if you have all online courses, it doesn't mean you can't have football. It does mean you have to wonder whether or not you can actually get students into the stands and fans into the stands. And that's where it changes the financial aspects, but all aspects of college football. I don't think that yesterday said we're not going to have a college football season. I do think that it showed we're very likely to not have a college football season for a good portion of the non-Power 6 leagues. That's what, because they need football to make money, not just their own home games, but those guarantee games. You take away the guarantee games, and now the home games, the regular conference games for those conferences are crazy expensive with very little money coming in. That's where I wonder if those schools will have football.
You mean this season or long term?
This season, and then how it affects them long term.
Yeah, because that's the issue that I have, is I think the damage done, especially, Doug, if there is no college football season, will be widespread, and there will be programs that will go away because of the financial aspect of it. This is going to be very, very interesting, and why it's important for them to try to push through with the season. They almost have to. And most of the kids are going to be willing. And here's the other thing. We see it in pro sports where guys are opting out. Where would you be, Doug, if you were a college coach and guys, if you're at Michigan's football team and 20 kids go to Jim Harbaugh, I don't feel comfortable playing. Are you cool with that?
I don't think you'll have a choice. Then whether you're cool with it or not cool with it, you won't have a choice. Kid doesn't want to play. I mean, it's going to come down to, and the NCAA would likely grant a kid a redshirt year, whatever. You know, to me, again, this is how college kids really think. I would be like, if I'm a backup, I'm like, I hope the starters do that. That way I get to play. They all want to show themselves. They all want to play. They just do. If you poll them, I'd say you get a 95 to 98% kids want to play. If they don't, then, you know, they'll be, I'm sure, granted a medical redshirt year, and somebody else will get that opportunity. You know, the college coaches that I've spoken with, and some are actually over 60 years old or in the most danger prone group, have said, like, look, it's about the kids and getting the opportunity to play an unbelievable experience, whether it's football or basketball. The if you're in danger as a coach, you should be willing to either step aside, sign a waiver or whatever so that the kids can play. And I think most coaches would actually do that. Where it gets tricky is with fans in the stands. But I think the kids want to play, and if they don't want to play, they can opt out, and there'll be somebody in their stead. I don't think you can do spring football, though, because none of the kids, they all think they're going to the NFL, and any kid who thinks he's going to the NFL won't want to put themselves in that sort of harm's way, even if it's a 5 or 6-game season, because then you're talking about playing 20 games in a calendar year, and your body, NFL teams would not want that, and the kids wouldn't want that. I don't think that's really a viable option for schools.
And one last thing, Doug. Would you sign a waiver as a fan to go sit in the stands and watch a college football game?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And yet you're right not
to. Of course
to.
We disagree.
But I would also tell you that having taken business law from a professor named Andy Urich at Oklahoma State, signing a waiver doesn't actually clear that school of liability. It's actually a bit of a misconception. You can still sue even if you sign a waiver. So the waiver idea makes people think that they can't sue, even though they can. On the other hand, the idea that you would sign a waiver, go to a college football game, potentially contract COVID-19, and then sue a school, you're pretty much the dumbest and worst human being, one of the bad human beings on earth. Like, right? Like you legitimately were told of the dangers, hopefully prepared yourself, wore your gloves, wore your mask, still want to get it, and then you're going to blame somebody else? Sorry, I don't have time for that level of idiocy.
Because then they would say that you shouldn't have had a game. There shouldn't have been a game if there was a chance of me getting sick.
Right. We want nothing in terms of personal accountability, and that's a different story. Okay. Did Pat Mahomes give away a golden opportunity with the contract that he signed? Rob Parker's not just a radio host and a professor at USC. He's also a writer for Deadspin. His article is going to drop at some point in the very near future. That's exactly what he said. We'll allow him to kind of thoroughly make his point, and Bucky Brooks will either agree or disagree. He'll join us next in the Dan Patrick Show.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb, Rob Parker, in for Dan the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show, Fox Sports Radio. Rob is, among other things, a talented writer. He's written for a long, long time, different newspapers.
34 years, if you could believe that, since my first newspaper job.
34 years.
The Wilkes-Barre Times Leader. I was a high school sports writer. Doug, you ready?
Yeah.
I covered Rocket Ishmael and Quadri, his brother. They were high school track stars in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. I was 21 years old, and they were seniors in high school.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Absolutely positively crazy. Absolutely positively crazy. Okay, so if you go to Deadspin.
It has posted, yes.
It has posted. Did you retweet it?
I'm doing it right now. I just got it. Yep.
Good. There you go. Give him a chance to retweet it. All right, so the article out on Deadspin, written by Rob Parker, who, of course, is co-hosting with me today here on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app, and, of course, here in the Dan Patrick Show and the Dan Patrick app. Is that Pat Mahomes gave away a great opportunity. What is that opportunity?
The opportunity was to make history and to change the way the NFL does business with his players. Like, he, of all players who could have demanded and gotten a fully guaranteed contract, and what I mean by that, Doug, is it doesn't have to be 10-year whatever they would have agreed on, but whatever it would have been, whatever the amount of money that they talked about in the deal would be fully guaranteed. If it's a 6-year deal, 4-year deal, whatever they had come up with and whatever the money was, it should have been fully guaranteed, and he was the guy. We saw Kirk Cousins get a 3-year, as a free agent, a 3-year fully guaranteed contract for $84 million, and I just thought there was a golden opportunity to change the landscape of what NFL players, all the other leagues, NBA, Major League Baseball, National Hockey League, you get guaranteed contracts. Mike Trout signed for $426 million. He's going to get $426 million. Not a dollar less, not a dime less. I remember when A-Rod was leaving the Rangers and wanted to go to the Red Sox. Do you remember that story?
Yep.
And he was going to take a little pay cut to go to the Red Sox so that it all could fit. And the union refused to allow him to take a pay cut because he had to get all the money that he had signed for. Right. So that deal was nixed, which is fine. And I get it, because once you open up that Pandora's box, you're going to have problems and other people. And in this case, had Mahomes made the NFL do this, other players could have maybe followed his lead and been like, this is where we should be headed. And whether the contracts, Doug, are smaller, 3 years, 2 years, whatever the money is, it should be guaranteed. The headline said $503 million, But there is no guarantee that he's going to get. You could speculate all you want. He could get hurt in next season and never be the same player and never get all that money. My point is he should sign for a fully guaranteed contract, and that's what he should have held out for.
Okay. I mean, look, if you like that, then you like what Kirk Cousins did in getting two straight. Remember, he was a franchise taggy 2 straight years, which is what Dak Prescott could do. He could be a franchise tag 1 more year, okay? Which again, guaranteed this year for like $31 million and change. Next year would be maybe a little bit more because it's the average of the top 5 salaries. Probably would be more. And so, you know, next year in the 32, 33, and then he could be transition tagged, or he could be a free agent, and then he could sign. But Pat Mahomes was not a free agent. He does have guaranteed money. It just may not be for the length of time or the amount of money that you believe. Really, this is a $274.781 million guaranteed deal for 6 years. Most of the money is actually paid up. A good portion of the money is paid up front, $141 million or so in the next 2 years, right? March of 2022, he'll be fully paid. $141 million.
No, he signed for 503. That's the number that they told you.
No, listen. You're reading the Lee Steinberg, hey, I signed the guy for 503.
That's what the contract says. He got to go Google it. The richest sports contract
I understand.
In the history of sports is Patrick Mahomes.
Look,
right?
that's a reporting issue. That's a journalism issue. That's actually not a Pat Mahomes issue. One, he was not a free agent. Okay, so they...
But that didn't stop him from signing him to a deal. Doug, stop using that. If that was the case, wait a minute.
What is better? You tell me.
The contracts wouldn't have given him a contract extension.
Fine, fine.
They didn't have to sign him, so stop using that as.
He wasn't
a free agent, but they signed him to a deal.
I understand. So, yes. So when I'm negotiating a deal and I'm giving you, listen, we'll sign you. You've been great. You're awesome. We love you here. You love it here. You love Andy Reid. You've been nothing but. But better than we ever could have imagined. Right? So here's what we're going to do. We're going to add on money to your new contract, and we're going to pay you more than anybody else. So you tell me, Rob, what's a better contract? $274 for 6 years? I'm asking you a question. What's a better contract? $274 for 4 years or $400 and change for 12 years for Trout? What's a better contract?
$426
no,
because the $274 that you're talking about is not totally guaranteed.
Yes,
there's a chance. No, it's not.
Have you read the details of the contract?
No, I haven't.
I mean,
I'm talking about the money that's out front, what you just mentioned. The $63 that was fully guaranteed at signing, the $141
no,
injury.
Look. In truth, it's all fully guaranteed in the first 6 years. It's paid out early. Okay, there's a difference there. What's paid out, it goes into what's called an escrow account. So the Chiefs have to put $63 million. They have to pay him $63 million right away. Then they have to put the rest of this money, the $103 million, in an escrow account immediately. And then that escrow account has to be paid by next March. Then there's another escrow account. So that's not just fully guaranteed money. That's money that they have to come up and put into escrow, real cash that they have to come up with right away. That is his money regardless. Okay. Then the contract is actually, there are advanced roster bonus rollovers, which is really guaranteed money.
No, it's not guaranteed because you got to make the roster and they can cut you, Doug.
If they cut him, he becomes a free agent and then he makes even more money.
Doug, he could be injured. That's the reason why they cut him.
And he has
injury guarantees. But there's a situation that the reason that they're letting him go is that he can't go get another deal comparable, or he's not as healthy, or there's another issue. All I'm saying is there's no guarantee that he's going to get 503. You can't guarantee me that.
You're right.
That's my point.
But the penalties to cutting him are so severe.
But does it mean you can't cut the guy, Doug? That's my point. Can they cut him?
Here's the biggest point. Okay,
yes or no? Can they cut him?
Of course they can.
Okay,
then. And then you know how much they'll owe him? Depending on when they cut him, if they cut him in the first 3 years, he'll get $141. But after the third year, then the fifth year becomes fully guaranteed. Right?
Doug, so, what again, if they cut him in the first 3 years?
Look, why would they cut him?
Because he got seriously injured, okay, or he has some other issue.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
So could he
thank
get caught?
Wait. Stop. Stop talking for 1 second, then I will give you a chance. Okay? So you're talking about a sport that has a possibility, okay, a higher possibility of a career debilitating injury than any of the other three big sports. So what you want an NFL team to do is sign up for the biggest contract ever, for the longest guarantee ever, when that's not the case with baseball. And Alex Smith is the perfect example of it. He signed a massive contract, which, by the way, he was the starter for Pat Mahomes' first year. And then he was traded away and he signed a big contract. He's $32 million against the cap. This is why you wouldn't do that. Okay, so but here's the biggest point, and this is the one that I want you to really think about when we bring on Bucky Brooks. If the point you are making is one that a lot of people are thinking, then how come nobody's saying it? The issue that people have with the contract is with the length of the deal. Okay, I've talked to NFL people like, man, I wouldn't sign for 12 years. Okay, but if you're not going to give up that length, you're going to give up some of the money. And secondly, it wasn't the guarantees that people have an issue with. It's he couldn't get his contract directly tied to the salary cap. So it doesn't increase as much over time as it potentially could. What he did was team friendly in that it doesn't kill them against the cap in the next couple of years, so that potentially they could re-sign the Chris Joneses of the world. And then he wants to stay there, and they made it so basically they can't cut him in the first 6 years, which will pay him $274 million. And then at that point, the cap should go up, and he'll be able to get all new contract.
Do you know that for sure? The cap's going up? Do you know that for sure?
No, it's probably going to go down the next couple of years. And then, yes, it's going to go up because it's gone up. It's like buying a house. Buying a house, even a recession, it's always eventually going to go back up in terms of value, unless somehow the economy does something it has not done over the last 50 years. The salary cap's going to go up probably 10% year to year, with the exception of the next 2 years, because we're in the middle of a pandemic, which we've never seen. With that, Bucky Brooks joins us here on Fox Sports Radio on the Dan Patrick Show. Help me out. In your mind, did Pat Mahomes miss an opportunity because he didn't get a fully guaranteed contract?
No, I don't think he missed out on the opportunity, Doug. I think actually what he did is he kind of like made it a situation where it was a win-win for both he and the team. Look, you're talking about $500 million that he could earn over a 10-year period. Given the state of the pandemic and the uncertainty that's ahead, sometimes it's smarter to grab the money when you can. And I know there are people that have said he should play the short-term game and keep re-upping and re-upping and re-upping, but we don't know what the revenue situation is going to look like and how the TV deals are going to impact it. And such. And the way the deal is structured, he made it very team friendly at the front end. So at least in 2021, 2022, they can keep guys like Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce in. They can re-sign Chris Jones if they want to and keep a pass rusher and those things. So the vehicles are in place for him to get paid and get paid handsomely, because you talk about an average of $45 million annually, while also allowing the team to win and compete at a high level. And also just know that there's some kickers in that deal that will allow him to get back to the table if he wants to. But on the surface, locking yourself up for 12 years in a marketplace that can provide you with opportunities to make more money seems like, maybe he jumped the gun. But in my mind, I think it was a smart move, because he got the money, he got the security, while also giving the team an opportunity to have the flexibility to keep a championship-caliber squad around him.
That's why Sammy Watkins needs to take a pay cut, right?
I mean, look, Sammy Watkins.
No, I'm asking. They say he did a team friendly deal to keep players around, so Sammy Watkins has to take a pay cut. My only point, Bucky, is that of all the players out there with the resume who could have been able to broker a deal to get it fully guaranteed, whether it was 10-year contract extension or 6 or 5 or whatever it is, he was in that position because of what he was able to accomplish in 2 years of starting. An MVP, a Super Bowl, that franchise hadn't won anything in 50 years. So that's really my point, is that he had a chance to do something different, to maybe change the pay structure, to maybe give NFL players the idea that they should be fully compensated and not have phony contracts that teams can get out at any point, but players don't have the same options. And that's where I think he missed a golden opportunity, because we saw Kirk Cousins get that kind of deal as a free agent, and he didn't have nearly the resume.
Yeah, Kirk Cousins had vehicles in place where he could flex, and he wanted a fully guaranteed deal, and he got that. And look, it depends on what your individual agenda is. If your individual agenda is to break the bank and go down as a legend when it comes to negotiating contracts, then cool, you can do it that way. But if your goal is to get the money that you want while also having an opportunity to compete at championship levels, because remember, we judge quarterbacks, even though people won't say this, we judge them based on whether they win and if they can win rings. And so Pat Mahomes is looking around and surveying the landscape and saying, I need to have the talent around me to play at the level that I'm playing at. Yes, he's the number one player in the league right now. He's the face of the National Football League. He's in a position to, as they say, chase rings and build a dynasty and all those things. But he also knows he has to have the weapons and people around him. As it relates to, like, Sammy Watkins and those things, I will say this about Sammy Watkins. Sammy Watkins is not Tyreek Hill. Sammy Watkins is more the complimentary player, more so than the number one. The guys that they realize are their blue-chip players, they certainly can find the money to pay those guys according to what their market value is. Those other guys, they don't have to get in where they fit, and I think that's where Sammy Watkins is.
Sammy Watkins has been overpaid for the last couple of years anyway, so that's, you know, he's their fourth best wide receiver. He's making fourth best catcher, but he's making $14 million. You're arguing for Sammy Watkins, Rob. Enjoy that island. Doug Gottlieb, Rob Parker in for Dan and the Danettes. Okay, I mean, perfect example of what can happen even to quarterbacks is Cam Newton, right? Cam Newton's because of injury, the Carolina Panthers ended up cutting him, right? He got all the money in his contract until the guarantees were up, and he got paid all those guarantees, and then he was a free agent on the market, and he signed for the veterans minimum. Bucky, do we know what Cam Newton looks like? And I ask you this from this perspective. I talked to some NFL people before this happened. They were like, I didn't like what I saw of him throwing the football last year in terms of a new throwing motion since the shoulder surgery. You add to it the Liz Frank injury and all the other contact injuries he's taken. Like, do we know what Cam Newton will look like when he takes the football field?
No, I mean, no one knows. But, like, we don't know that about anybody. Do we know what Nick Foles is going to look like when he plays? Like, we don't know anything about those guys. I think what we do know for certain is that, look, Cam Newton is a talented player. Cam Newton, at his best, has been an MVP-caliber player that is capable of getting his team to a Super Bowl. We also know that Cam Newton was the number one overall pick, and those other quarterbacks that are on the Patriots roster, they weren't. Jarrett Stidham is a fourth-round pick, and look, I'll say that they could have won with him, but all the people that are here carrying the flag for Jarrett Stidham, it's kind of ridiculous when you compare the two. And then Brian Hoyer, we've seen Brian Hoyer play for a decade, and he is what he is. I think what the Patriots see in Cam Newton is a guy who has a set of skills that they can build an offense around, a guy who, when he's right and healthy, they certainly can use him as a runner. And I think this is what you have to understand about Bill Belichick and defensive-minded coaches. Defensive-minded coaches typically like to have quarterbacks that give them the most problems. If you go back and look at his quotes in 2017, when he called Cam Newton public enemy number one because of the difficulty that he presents as a guy that can run it, can throw it, can do so many different things. I believe because they're not necessarily deeply invested in Cam Newton, man, I think you're going to see them run Cam Newton. I think you see them put him on the perimeter. You're going to see Cam Newton at his best. And I'm going to say this, and I'm fine being on record. This will be the best coaching that Cam Newton has ever received in his NFL career. And if he takes to the coaching and becomes real dialed in with the preparation part of how the Patriots get ready, we will see the best Cam Newton that we've seen in this league. And I think that's a scary thought for teams in the AFC.
Bucky, Washington is in the midst of changing its name. Daniel Snyder said it would never happen under his watch. Was it a combination of the financials from sponsors or whatnot that got this happening, or the mood and the movement of the country going on? What motivated him the most?
It certainly didn't come from the bottom of his heart that he woke up one day and said, you know what? I think I'm going to move away from this racial slur in the nickname of my team. I think the financial implications led him to make the move. And now, the thing is, Rob, I'm from North Carolina, but I have a lot of family in D.C. Yep. And look, Chocolate City loves Washington.
No doubt. They
love that franchise. They carry that franchise more than any other team and any other fan base. And so, look, this is a situation where they're trying to make right. This is an opportunity for Washington to reset the brand, to really capitalize on it. If he really embraces the opportunity to kind of reset and rebuild the franchise, rebuild the brand, man, you talk about it, he can make hand over fist and money with new uniforms and new merchandise and new logos and all of that other stuff. And so it's about embracing the opportunity. It's something that we knew was coming. And look, man, what has happened in the last 6 months? Like, we've seen so many different things happen in 2020, but this is kind of like a seismic sea change. And so people are having to embrace the change. And I think Washington, like Cleveland in baseball and Atlanta and some of these other, right, they're going to have to change the way they do business because, look, man, you can't go about doing this because Native Americans have been the only group that has been singled out to kind of be a moniker and an imagery and a mascot that we no longer can accept in this country.
Wait. So Braves is a bad thing? I'm struggling with that one.
Nah, so the Braves, in terms of the tomahawk chop and some of the imagery that have been on the Braves uniforms, like when they had Chief Wahoo and those things, like those things are not necessarily representative of where we're going when it comes to the way that we represent the entire country. So they're having to have conversations about that, and are they squared away with the Native Americans that are in that area or whatever, just like Florida State and some of the other schools that are representative with Native American logos and imagery.
Bucky, awesome stuff. I just listened to the most recent pod. It's a good one about, you know, kind of going back over the first round draft picks. You and DJ do an amazing job. It's called Move the Sticks. Download it if you can. Check them out on the NFL Network. Continued health and safety to your family and your friends. Thanks so much for joining us.
All right, Bucky.
Hey, man. Hey, man. Appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me.
Bucky Brooks, one of the good guys, former NFL player, course analyst with the NFL Network and Move the Sticks podcast. All right, coming up next, we're heading into another weekend with limited sports. But the NBA is very, very much on the horizon. Are NBA players kind of making fools of themselves with some of their posts on social media? We'll discuss next on the Dan Patrick Show.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Doug Gottlieb, Rob Parker, in for Dan and the Danettes and the Dan Patrick Show. So I believe all the teams that are going to the bubble, in the NBA bubble, are in Orlando. J.R. Smith apparently was told to shut down the IG Live because he was showing too much stuff. The Dallas Mavericks had some of their guys were DJing outside. There's been some fun things, but there have been a lot of complaints about the quality of food and the quality of stay in the NBA bubble. Rob, what's your reaction to it?
I'm not surprised. I think that the NBA, when you ask millionaires to put themselves in a very unfamiliar situation, a lockdown, that you got to make it as lavish and as great to make them feel comfortable. These are people who are used to the finer things in life. And I know Rondo tweeted out something or put on Instagram that he was in a Motel 6 or something. Like he took pictures of the room, saying it was in the motif of a Motel 6. I'm not knocking people who stay at Motel 6s. But I think maybe the NBA didn't go all out and probably should have in a situation like this when you're asking people to make such a commitment and do something that is very different and unusual to what they're used to.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, I have friends that are in the NBA, and they're like, look, we like the nicest hotel by their estimation is like the Peninsula Hotel in Chicago. Like when you're used to staying at the Peninsula, when you're used to staying at Four Seasons, you know, when you're used to staying at the best of the best, there is going to be a drop off. On the other hand, like, look, man, I'm not sure if you're aware, but there's 30 million people that are out of work and you're still getting paid at an unbelievable level. It's a bit of a sacrifice, but it's not like you're bunking up with six other dudes in two beds like we used to in AAU. Right? Like, it's just not a great look. You can say, like, they're going to have their own chefs once they get out of quarantine. Their own chefs. Like, we're going to do the best we can. But I think you end up having, you don't get sympathy. The common man spends all the money they can to go sit up in the upper deck and watch you play once or twice a year. Those are the real fans of the NBA.
I get that. But that doesn't mean that if you're used to a certain standard of living,
no question,
and it ain't what you're used to, Doug, that you can't say anything, that you have to be mum and act like everything's great when it's not.
But saying something on social media is different than saying something to Rob Pelinka or saying something to the NBA or going to the NBAPA and going like, "Hey, man, we got to improve this thing."
What world have you lived in?
What
world are you living in? Do you know what social media is and what people do on it all the time?
Yes, and this is one of the trappings of social media.
Well, but this is part of the
course. This is like the guy who's flying on American Airlines and his flight's delayed, and instead of going to the counter and having a discussion, they tweet out that American Airlines is the worst because my flight was delayed and my bag was lost. Like, yo, look, relax, things happen. We have to be reasonable about it. Like, we can't, there's just not enough rooms at the Four Seasons. There's not one city we can put you in. This is the best. This was negotiated over months, and this is the best thing we come up with.
And it still means that, Doug, if something is not up to standards, that you should still have the right to voice your opinion,
again,
whether you
have
like
freedom,
it or not.
I can tell you that it, to most dudes, you sit there and go like, dude, what? Like, I saw Patrick Beverley's, and Patrick Beverley's got gaming unis. You make the best of a situation. And part of it is Pat Beverley's played overseas. He knows just how good dudes have it in comparison to the NBA. And I get it. I get it.
When you've been eating standards from somebody else, everybody's different.
No question. And Rondo has every right to complain. To complain publicly, I think, ends up having the type of negative effect. We're like, dude, really? Really? Because having stayed at a Motel 6, I can tell you that ain't what it looks like. Right. And you have to be understanding and reasonable, and you make yourself out to be an entitled a-hole. That's what you look like.
Maybe he was in the tub relaxing and realized that there was a mouse in there with him. I mean, I don't know. Would that make you feel good?
No, you have the right to complain. I just think social media is like, hey, look how bad we have it. Like, I don't know if it looks that bad.
Unrealistic to think that everybody's going to follow the rules. No one's going to say, speak out of turn. I don't think that's a realistic approach to life. That's not how things work. And sometimes the squeaky wheel gets the oil. So maybe they can do better if it's not up to par. That's all. Yeah. It's not the end of the world.
I get it. I just remember, at the end of the day, the fans do pay your salaries. And those fans are ones that many of them are out of work right now. They're like, yo, man, like, seems all right to me. I get the food could be a little bit better. Do you tweet when you get a great meal? If you do, then I'll recognize a little bit better. Rob Parker, check him out on The Odd Couple. Check out The Doug Gottlieb Show coming up later. Dan's back Monday. It's Dan Patrick Show.